Hello, I'm Emma Rutland, the Duchess of Rutland, and this is my podcast, Duchess, a podcast in which I explore the most historic homes in the UK and meet the inspiring women who lead them. As a daughter of a Welsh farmer, I grew up far away from the glamour and wealth of aristocracy. But my life changed forever when I fell in love and married my husband, the 11th Duke of Rutland. Suddenly, one of Britain's most historic buildings was not only my home, but under my care. I wanted to learn more about this world and hear the stories of the other women, like me, the custodians of these great homes. So, in this podcast, I will travel to breathtaking homes, learn incredible history, and meet the inspiring women who lead these estates today. So please do join me on my very special journey. This is Duchess, the podcast. Before we get started, I'd like to say thank you to our wonderful sponsor, Circle DNA. For those who may not know, Circle DNA is a company that specializes in finding smarter, easier, and more effective solutions to your health by testing your DNA. Listeners, you know how much I love to learn about family history and lineage, and I found my Circle Premium results absolutely fascinating. I learned so much about myself, from my diet and nutrition, skin and fitness, to common diseases and cancer risks. Circle DNA believe there is not a one-size-fits-all approach to healthy living, and something I've learned from visiting all these different homes and meeting so many wonderful people along the way is that we all are so very different, with our own unique outlook and our own unique stories to tell. So developing your own unique approach to your personal health makes total sense. If you sign up to Circle DNA, you will receive your DNA testing kit in the post. Use the easy-to-follow testing instructions to self-swab at home. Send your completed swab to their laboratory for analysis, and within 3 weeks, you'll receive your results and personalized recommendations. You will also have the opportunity to book 2 complimentary consultations, one with a health coach and one with a genetic counsellor. To learn more about Circle DNA, visit their website and use the code THEDUCHESS40 for 40% off their DNA test kits. Sleeping Fields of Northampton rests one of the greatest real national treasures, Althorp House, a home of history, style, and culture. To view Althorp is a treat. Once a red brick Tudor mansion, the home has been renovated to become its grand grey Weldon stone-faced exterior. The entrance is flanked with 4 Romanesque columns, and as the building stands proud in the open green clearing of the estate, you get a sense of landmark. And that sense continues as the home of the monumental Spencer family, a family with a bloodline that includes Winston Churchill, George Washington, and of course Princess Diana. This is one of Britain's most important families, living in one of its finest estates. I met with Lady Karen Spencer online to talk through this incredible lineage and their magnificent home. In this episode, I'm introduced to many extraordinary women in the Spencer family. Lady Karen regales some of the ghostly activities that have been experienced in the home, and I'm briefed on the agricultural vision that lies at the heart of the Althorp House. Today, I am so excited that I have been joined by Lady Spencer, or her correct title, I believe, is the Right Honourable, the Countess of Spencer, whose name is Karen. Is that right?
That's right. There you are.
There you are. But you haven't always been Lady Spencer. So could you tell us just for a moment a little bit about your own family and whether you feel anything in your background helped prepare you for the life as a custodian of a stately home?
So my father managed national parks. That experience of being sensitized to the importance and watching renovation restoration projects happen my whole life was useful. It certainly did give me an appreciation for history and historic sites generally.
So you've always had the history very much connected with your journey.
Yeah, it's interesting. I did.
And where exactly in the world did you grow up?
We lived in very remote parts of Canada for the most part. And I do think it did give me a feeling of comfort in the middle of nowhere. I notice that it makes people nervous when they're not used to that. So I'm grateful for that.
It's very comforting, isn't it? If you are of that nature,
yes,
it's a wonderful thing to have your own company. And where did you meet Charles?
We met on a blind date.
Oh. And was it instant?
No, it wasn't. No, it took a minute. I mean, obviously very handsome and interesting and charming, but I was a jaded 38-year-old by the time that I met Charles, you know, and I'd been around the block a few times, so I took a minute.
And did you know anything about Charles's heritage and history and home?
Knew nothing about the house or any of that. I, of course, knew he was Princess Diana's brother, and I had, you know, a vague recollection of his speech. But I, unlike a lot of people, didn't actually follow any of the royal family, or I didn't know anything. So I didn't know he had other sisters. I didn't know much of anything at all.
So you have now been married to a Charles Spencer for how long?
10 years.
We celebrated. Goodness.
I know. We celebrated 10 years this summer.
But just for a moment, if I may, Karen, you have got the most extraordinarily rich history in your home. Could you give us a brief history of the house and how the Spencers came to build it?
Well, that's really interesting because up until fairly recently, we believed that the house was built in 1508 and the Spencers built it. But in fact, something that Charles's grandfather had suspected, and my husband, of course, as you know, is an amazing historian, and he's been looking into this a little bit further. And it's probable that there was actually a house here before 1508, but the Spencers moved in 1508 and have been here ever since. So Charlotte is the 19th generation of Spencers to live here. I like to make people relaxed when they're nervous about the furniture or nervous about, you know, when they come here and they might be anxious that they might break something. I like to say, you know, 19 generations of Spencers have managed to, and it's still standing, so we can all relax. It's all fine.
So the second Earl of Sunderland, Robert Spencer, was particularly key in developing the architecture and gardens on the estate. Can you talk about some of the changes that he made to the estate, and in particular, his decision to bring the André Le Nôtre, the architect from Versailles?
So interestingly, Le Nôtre never actually came here. He did redesign the park, but he did it remotely from a plan.
That's cheating, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know if it actually counts, but that's in fact what happened. Henry Holland is really, as far as the actual house itself, is probably, you know, one of the more significant contributions. His father-in-law was Capability Brown, and because at the time it was a red brick house, and there was a belief, you know, Capability Brown decreed that red brick houses set the surrounding land into a fever. And so Holland reclad all of the whole house in limestone in about 1780. So that was probably the most significant. He also added the hallways. And then another sort of key thing that happened, I think, was in 1729 to 1733, the stables were put up. And that was Roger Morris, who actually had done a lot of architectural work for the family. family. So Sarah Jennings at that time had Roger Morris working on Wimbledon House in Blenheim. And he came and he built the stables, and he also built the walled garden that is just up the hill from the house. And that's actually a major project we're looking to restore. So hopefully this fall, if all goes to plan, we'll be putting the walled garden back to use. It's been sitting dormant for about 100 years, having been built in 1733. So it's a 5-acre walled garden that produced all of the fruit, vegetables, and flowers for the house. So we're returning that to use, and hopefully we'll be able to do the same again.
Gosh. And you have had, as we know, lots of connections with members of the royal family. But one of the extraordinary rooms is, I believe, Queen Mary's bedroom. Mm-hmm. Will you share with us that story?
I love that bedroom. It's so beautiful. It's got the most incredible, beautiful bed in it as well. Very beautiful, big canopy bed. She stayed in there. So it was a visit in 1913. So the sixth Earl was Lord Chamberlain to George V. And so they had separate bedrooms and he was staying opposite. So it's kind of a little suite, that the Queen Mary bedroom, then the King William bedroom was named the King William bedroom from a previous visit in the 1600s from King William. But the Queen Mary was from that 1913 visit most recently. And the King stayed next door. George V stayed next door in the King William bedroom. But it's a beautiful room. And it does have a lot of needlepoint that Charles's grandfather needlepointed in that room, which I love as well.
How amazing. That's a wonderful story. Can you describe for me the room that you're in, the colour, decor, and the name of it?
So this is the South Drawing Room. It's a beautiful light green colour. And it used to be called the Sir Joshua Room because the room is full of a lot of paintings by Reynolds. So mostly family paintings. The first Countess Spencer, Georgiana Spencer, and her daughter, the Duchess of Devonshire, is in a painting here. I can show you. We've got...
Oh, that's stunning.
It's a wonderful room.
With duck egg blue on the walls.
Mm-hmm.
Such a pretty colour. And then you've got some wonderful pink flashing around on
yes,
the chairs.
A little bit of pink here and there. So we've got a set, a whole 2 couches, I think it is, and 4 chairs. And they're needlepoint. And they were needlepointed by Lavinia, the second Countess Spencer, and her friends. And so in my journey of restoration here, the one lesson I have taken is that needlepoint lasts forever. Basically, it's incredible how durable it is, the needlepoint. I mean, these were done in the 1700s and they're used all the time and they're still sort of in one piece. I am looking into restoring them because they're in need of restoration, but not the needlepoint itself is actually in very good shape. It's the wool fabric that is on the edges of it that's more in need of restoration. But actually, Charles's grandfather was an avid needlepointer and we have a lot of chairs that he designed and needlepointed himself actually in the Queen Mary bedroom.
Unbelievable. How many rooms have you got there?
Oh my goodness, I don't know. It's about 60,000 square feet, I think, totally. There was a point when they were contemplating popping big wings out on the side, and it was supposed to be 5 times this size, ultimately, the house, and I'm so grateful it isn't. We have plenty to dust and clean as it is.
Absolutely. So on the Althorp estate, the most impressive features is your 115-foot picture gallery, which has retained, I believe, its Tudor wood panelling to this day. Could you just describe this gallery to us and what your very favourite portrait that hangs on the walls is?
So interestingly, it does have that original paneling, but it was rediscovered relatively recently. So it had been covered up. I think it was Charles's grandfather, possibly great-grandfather, that discovered that it was back there. So it had been covered up for quite some time. It is extraordinary. My husband likes to describe it as the early gym. So it was originally designed, apparently, so that women could walk up and down it to get some exercise in their long gowns when they might have got muddy by going outside. It's got an incredible collection in there. We are very lucky in that we do have a really lovely art collection here. My favorite painting is actually not in the picture gallery. My favorite painting in the house is actually in the chapel, and it's a Rubens of Madonna and Child, and it's absolutely beautiful.
Oh, how wonderful. And you have some notable historic figures in your history, don't you?
So the Spencer family, obviously, as you know, made most of their money in sheep farming and ultimately were knighted by Henry VIII in, I think it was 1519, and then ultimately were the Earls of Sunderland. So that was the Spencer title. And then there's this wonderful connection between the Churchills and the Spencers, where my favorite personality in this whole lineage is definitely Sarah Jennings, who was such a powerhouse and an early feminist and just a fabulous woman. And she ultimately, the reason why we're still here, because the senior branch of the Spencer family moved to Blenheim and became part of the Dukedom of Marlborough. But the Spencer family is still here, and everything that we have is because it was left by Sarah Jennings, essentially. When you think of a woman who was born in 1660, who managed to amass her own personal wealth, it's rather extraordinary. So I quite enjoy wearing the diamond necklace that was a gift from Queen Anne to Sarah Jennings, because she's a real powerhouse. I was reading her letters to the favorite grandson who she left everything to. And she was down to the nuts and bolts of, you know, how much was this one being paid and that, and watch out for this and watch out for that. And I said to my curator, Annie, who's fantastic, we were reading through her letters, and I said, wow, she was really bossy. And Annie said, Lady Spencer, we're woke. She wasn't bossy. She was a leader. True.
That's so nice. And I guess that it can be confused being bossy and the leader, can't it?
There we are. Yes.
So often is.
Definitely a leader.
And so hence the connection through the Spencer's blood and what you just told us with Winston Churchill, because that's how would he be related?
That senior branch of the Spencer family, their last name was actually Spencer up until the 1800s, where, from what I understand, they requested from Parliament to reconnect with John Churchill, who was the patriarch. So they didn't have the patriarch's last name because ultimately the title had moved through the female line. So all of John Churchill and Sarah Jennings' boys died. And so Sarah, being Sarah, managed to get the title and everything passed down through the female line through that Spencer heir. But they wanted to reconnect with the Churchill name. And so in the 1800s, I think it was, they petitioned Parliament and their name changed from Spencer to Spencer hyphen Churchill.
Perfect. Well, that explains it so beautifully. When we look at their history, the Spencers have always championed a socially conscious and principled approach to life. This is especially evident when Lady Karen speaks in such admiring tones for figures like Sarah Jennings. This confirms to me that she is cut from the same mould. This is a quick reminder that you're listening to Duchess, hosted by me, Emma Rutland, and this is a podcast produced by One Fine Play in collaboration with Beaver Castle. Coming up on the podcast, Lady Karen outlines the sustainable vision for the future of the Spencer estate, and I hear the story about the little girl in the picture gallery, and Lady Karen opens up about what being a custodian of Althorp has taught her. But first, I wanted to learn more about the extraordinary women of Althorp House. So many significant women have called Althorp Estate their home. Can you tell us about some of the female custodians of this magnificent home and reveal some of the contributions they made to the estate?
There have been a lot, you know, amazing women, strong women. Penelope actually comes to mind. I think part of the reason why she's so important to me is she brought a big left-leaning political point of view to the family. She was the daughter of Lord Southampton. And I think, you know, one of the things that I'm proudest of the family is how socially conscious they've always been. Looking back, you know, a lot of fighting for vote to the middle classes and the abolition of slavery. And I think that she really started that trend in the family, bringing a big perspective here. She also was the one who did the overhaul of the finances and, you know, started paying people more. She was really sort of did a lot of HR work here and a lot of some of the stuff, not very glamorous, but I thought it was really interesting reading about what she had built here. It was really interesting.
That's a wonderful story. And one of the notable ladies was, of course, Lady Georgiana Spencer, who is immortalized by Keira Knightley in that fabulous film Duchess, which I so adore. Just tell us a little bit about some of the famous parties that she threw at Althorp in the 18th century.
So she was a daughter of the Earl, so she was never running the house, but a daughter. And she went on to, of course, be the Duchess of Devonshire. And I think there was a lot of gambling, from what I understand. She had a terrible gambling problem, ultimately, that was sort of the end of her in the end. It's actually quite a sad story, really, losing her child and being in debt the whole time with gambling debts and ultimately dying. lying rather disfigured. Beautiful, glamorous, very entertaining, you know, incredibly powerful politically as well. She was a big Whig and did a lot of work politically, but ultimately pretty a tragic story.
Yeah, very sad. And now coming back to now, the present, how would you describe your role right now?
I feel quite lucky, actually, that I was 38 when I met Charles and had a lot of experience in running my own business. And I will say, I think it takes a long time to understand these houses. Also, I'm from Canada, so that's another layer of needing to understand the culture. And I feel really grateful that it was really after we moved here full time, when we had been married for 8 years, and we were able to come more and more to grips with how we wanted to live here.
And do you feel understood and supported in your role?
Well, I do now. Some of these places are very old-fashioned, and there are a lot of people working in them and around them that are very old-fashioned. And that sort of took a bit of rejigging and making sure we had the right team that were prepared for a modern working couple who make decisions together and work together. But I do now. And I think Charles and I work very well together, and we have a lot of complementary skills, and we sort of divide the labor. I essentially run the house and he runs the broader estate, although there's a lot of overlap, needless to say, both. And we're both very involved in the farming, which is a big area that we're looking to improve.
Great. What are you looking at doing there?
Making the whole practice a lot more regenerative and a lot more environmentally friendly. I bought a dairy herd, which is so exciting. I'm loving being a dairy farmer.
Oh my goodness. That's
so much fun. It's so much fun.
Well, I was well known before I got married. The nickname I was given by many of David's friends was Dairy Maid Duchess, because I did come from that very family and I did learn to milk a cow. So have you actually learned to milk a cow, Karen?
I'm not very good at it. Not very good at it at all, but I do love it. I absolutely love it. Charlotte and I will go up on a Sunday and help with the milking and the bottling. And, you know, when there's a calf that's born, we all run up. And these cows, of course, have never had anyone be unpleasant to them. So they're so friendly and they will let you hold their calf right from birth. And it's just all so magical.
And what sort of cattle are they?
They're Jersey breeds.
Love Jersey. They're so gentle and they have those wonderful long eyelashes, don't they?
Yeah, they're so wonderful. But we're crossing them with Red Poll and a couple of different things to make them a tiny bit more hardy. But it's just absolutely magical. And, you know, we've taken this one little bit of the farmland and we're turning it into this little jewel of regenerative farming. And we're working with these incredible women. So they've moved in and are making compost with us here. And it's all that whole thing has become really, it's absolutely fascinating and fun. And Charles and I are both really enjoying this sort of shift and digging our hands into the earth a little bit. So it's been quite fun.
That's amazing. And out of interest, it's one of those questions that I didn't really realize would have such a significance, but I'm sure our listeners today will be waiting for this one, particularly knowing where I am. Do you have any ghosts? Have you ever felt a sort of presence with you, Karen?
We have had a number of interesting connections with the sixth Earl and his wife, Margaret. So there have been a number of different ghost stories. You know, Charles's great aunt, who I mentioned, Margaret, who was the child that her mother, Margaret, was giving birth to when she died, kept seeing a little girl in the picture gallery. And there have been a couple of different people that have had different encounters with various members of staff who've passed, I think. But I personally have never felt anything but good energy. So even the sixth Earl, who seems to keep sort of coming out, we've had interesting, funny things happening. And then it's the actual date that he died, or it's the date she died, or, you know, I picked my engagement ring as a family ring and it turns out it's her ring. And we got married on the day that they got engaged. And we just, you know, we just keep having a lot of different little encounters.
It's sort of coincidences that can't be explained. You know, I know exactly what you mean.
We unfortunately moved his portrait out of a prominent place. And then all sorts of windows and doors kept being open in odd places until we finally worked out that he was upset that we had moved his painting and we put him back.
So interesting. Those things happen, and they really, truly do. We had one portrait here when we arrived. I didn't really know who it was by, and had a name put on thinking it was by this certain person, and it fell off the wall. And so up we put it again, it fell off again. And so they almost do speak to you, the houses, in their own ways. And what about Charles? Has he ever seen anything or felt anything?
Same thing, only this recently with the sixth Earl. We've had a lot of different encounters, but I think we both agree that it's energy, you know, and I think also because we're digging around in a lot of stuff, you somehow unearth an energy, if that makes sense. But the one thing I would say, because like I said, I do stay here by myself a lot, I've never felt uncomfortable here. And I think it's one of the things that people say about this house, actually. It's incredibly warm for a big stately home, but the scale of it is somehow manageable. It's nowhere near the size of your home, for example. It is a little bit more manageable size. And the proportions of it somehow, you know, this corridor of rooms is so incredible because whether it's just myself working in here by myself, the room feels good. It doesn't feel like I'm overwhelmed by the size of it. And equally, we can have 150 people for drinks and it also feels good in here. So I think we're very lucky in the sort of livability of this house.
What has it taught you, Karen, over the last 10 years about heritage and being a custodian?
Patience, I think. I'm rather impatient. And these places are big, slow-moving tankers, you know, and, you know, making change. I love change and I have a lot of energy for improving things, but I think it's teaching me patience. You know, this, it's a very unique experience to be a tiny part of something that was going on for so long before you arrived and that will go on for so much longer after. An incredible amount of gratitude for all of the men and women who contributed to this house and its ongoing maintenance. You know, people like Charles's grandfather, who during the period when he was sort of being taxed at 98%, lived in poverty here, himself caring for the artifacts in the house, you know, himself a curator, and dedicated his life to cataloging and understanding all of the chattels in the house and their provenance, and documented in these unbelievable great volumes all of the knowledge, condensed all of the knowledge from all the original sources of information into one particular volume, multiple volumes. So I've got a book on the walking sticks, and every single walking stick and its provenance is described in great detail. So now we are taking those books, digitizing them because there's only one copy and they're hand typed by Charles's grandfather, and then adding the digital pictures to those. But we still have all those walking sticks, and I can't believe, you know, the joy that it gave me to take all of the walking sticks out and lay them on the table and go through and match up to the descriptions of Charles's hand typed book. You know, I'm just so grateful for the time and effort that others have put into this.
Well, for me, with the telling that story, and I'm hopeless at anything like that, you are very patient, Karen. So I would imagine you have definitely brought patience to your role. I think you most probably had a good deal of it before you came. So as you think about it, and what a gracious, lovely story we've had today, what would you, sitting there in that wonderful drawing room, say to six generations before you who have been the lady of the house?
Thank you. I think, really. Thank you. Because it's all here because of the efforts that they put in. And I hope someday, six generations on, someone will go, thank you.
Oh, what would your advice be to six generations down the line?
I do think that the one thing that I'm really happy that I did is to learn what happened before, because I think the danger in a place like this is to come in and change things without taking the time to really understand the history that went before it. And just the more I learn, the more reverence I have for how well designed and how well thought out everything was. So it's important to have that background before you make any changes.
And that's very wise. And I think most probably that's wise advice for anyone moving into a new old home, because you understanding why a home is built the way it is, the reasons for things, is so key, because you sort of get under the skin of it then, don't you? And then it's not your ego dictating what you do. The house almost talks to you with its own voice.
I agree. And again, understanding understanding the context of changes. Oh, they weren't using the dining rooms anymore. They weren't entertaining. So of course this got ripped out. And that really piecing that all together, I find absolutely fascinating. And having the opportunity to put things back to where they were is just so exciting. And I don't think that there's anything Charles and I hope to do here that is new. Maybe the bathrooms, because those weren't there before. But other than that, it's really about thoughtfully putting back, whether it's the walled garden, and we're literally looking at what were the access points in the 1800s, which we have them at, where did they come in from to service that walled garden? And it's in exactly the right spot. You just have to really go back, because it'd be tempting to kind of go, oh, let's do it. No, but if you look back, it really was in the right spot almost always.
It's fascinating. And most of all, I think, fascinating to me that Lady Karen Spencer has so graciously shared her story with us today and has been so hospitable in everything that she shared. But yet again, we have gone across the pond to hear how a Canadian, in this case, Americans that I've interviewed, have come into our British heritage and have relished, loved it, cherished it for now, for today, and for the future. And they are very lucky to have you, and I'm very grateful for you coming on and talking to us on Duchess today. Thank you, Karen.
Oh, well, Emma, thank you for all the work you're doing to highlight this untold story, so many of these women. And I'm, you know, really congratulate you for shining the light on it and for sharing the stories of so many who I think are doing very important work. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and God bless you all. What I will take away from this most fascinating conversation with Lady Spencer is the importance of one's values, from the women who led Althorp when they were not socially permitted to the importance of sustainability that seems to be centre to the Althorp's mission. This is a home and family of morals. With Lady Karen Spencer, another thread is woven into the tapestry of the principled individuals who have lived here. It's been a pleasure to share this time with such a wonderful custodian, Lady Karen. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. This is the last episode of season 2. It's been an amazing experience. Thank you so much, everyone at home, for making this possible. We never would have been able to make a second season without the love and passion you listeners give us. And I'm so grateful you continued on this journey with us. Thank you, and hopefully we'll be seeing you again very soon. Farewell. I'd also just like to thank once again our wonderful sponsor, Circle DNA, for supporting the podcast. If you want to learn more about the great work Circle DNA do and make a real investment into your health, visit their website and use the code THEDUCHESS40 for 40% off their DNA test kits. Now, listeners, time for our final listener inbox segment of season 2. I've really enjoyed being able to share your messages, and we love reading them. So please continue writing in. This message is from Rubina. Hi, Emma. I just wanted to reach out and tell you that I'm loving your podcasts. Women have always been the forefront of historic preservation. We're bringing these homes to life and calling great attention to women who managed to keep these great estates maintained and preserved, a task that throughout history has so often fallen to women who do not receive enough credit or make the history books. I hope you and your family are well. Keep up the good work. Rubina, this is a brilliant way to end, because you've identified that this is so important to the podcast. Women's role in heritage has been underrepresented for so long, and we wanted to make this podcast the champion of those voices, as well to entertain and inform. Thank you, Rubina, and everyone who wrote to us. We love hearing your kind words, and hopefully we'll be back again to read out more soon. After launching the first series of Duchess, we were inundated with hundreds of emails and letters from around the world expressing the desire and excitement to make the listening of Duchess a reality. To experience these glorious places for yourself in person really can't be beaten. And since receiving all your cherished letters and emails, we've now partnered with the award-winning luxury travel company Abercrombie & Kent to bring our much-loved podcast to life. From guided tours to behind-the-scenes access of private parts of the family home, to fishing on the family lakes and staying in grand rooms, our partnership with Abercrombie & Kent enables you to experience what I have had the joy to experience for you and your loved ones. With over 55 years of experience, Abercrombie & Kent specializes in curating luxury holidays in every corner of the globe, connecting world wanderers to interesting places, people, and cultures in real and authentic ways. From Inverary to Beaver and beyond, stay, visit, and explore two or more of the houses featured on our series Duchess. Enjoy the chance to spend time with the people you've loved hearing about, discover the hidden corridors we discuss in the series, and explore the grand homes and gardens on your own private tour. Abercrombie & Kent will help develop your tailor-made itinerary across the UK from one historic place featured in Duchess to the next. For more information, visit abercrombiekent.co.uk/duchess. Couple of quick notes before we go. Important ones. Make sure you subscribe to Duchess the podcast so you get automatically notified about new episodes wherever you listen to a podcast. I want to know about you and what you think of the show. So please be sure to send me your comments and tell me about your own lineage and the women who have inspired you in your life. Please write to me on duchess@duchessthepodcast.com. And if there are any stately homes in particular you'd like me to visit, do send your suggestions to me as soon as possible. I've started a newsletter that includes all this and more and comes straight to your inbox. It's really easy to sign up at duchessthepodcast.com. You've been listening to Duchess, the podcast, presented by me, Emma Rutland, the Duchess of Rutland, produced by One Fine Play in collaboration with Beaver Castle. From Beaver Castle, Lady Violet Manners is the executive producer. From One Fine Play, James Bishop is the executive producer. Kasra Ferruzia is the audio and visual engineer. Connor Foley is the editorial producer and researcher. Additional creative support from Selena Christofies and Theo Banner. Thanks for listening to Duchess, the podcast.